Welcome, Barry and David, to the show. Just can you introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about who you are?
Go, Dave.
I'll go first. I'm Dave Gardner, and I'm one half of the 36dB founders. I've been making electronic music for, God, since the mid-90s. I've done various things with different artists, but my main kind of work has been with, for the last 20 years anyway, has mainly been working, writing and producing with Sasha. Yeah, I've been involved in all his albums and remixes and live shows. Yeah, and that's how we know each other as well, isn't it, Baz?
Yeah. I was met Sasha in Manchester back in 1988, and the first ever production he did in a studio was with my band Evolution when we first got started, which is how we know each other from Manchester. And of course, we were all going to all the raves in Blackburn at the time, and the Hacienda, of course, when Sasha was first stepping into his DJ career, and I was working with my band. And then, yeah, I basically went off and had my career with my band and Sasha, and, of course, with his. And then we were signed to Deconstruction for quite a few years. And then I set up my own record label with my band partner, John Sutton, called Fluid Recordings. And we did that through the mid to late 90s. And then I came to the US in 2002, 2003. And started working with Sasha again. And I was in the first two Involver albums. And then Dave got on board. And then I started having kids. And so we separated our ways for a couple of years when the kids were really young. And then Dave and Sasha reached out to me and asked me to work on the Scene Delete album. It was back in 2015, 16, was it, Dave?
I think it was a little bit before that. We were, because it was, that album's percolating for a while, but it was around 2014, 2015, we all came back together. And then that led to the live shows at the Barbican. And we've basically, since then, we're like a little band, really. We go off and do our own little things, and then everybody comes back together, and yeah, we just keep making music. We're still here doing it after all this time and still enjoying it and just finding new ways of coming up with cool ideas, like, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Awesome. And so 36dB, should we go on to talking a little about what it is and how you've come to this point to create it?
It all happened during lockdown, where obviously there wasn't really a lot going on for us, and we were in regard to live shows and things like that, or gigs or anything. So like most musicians, we're all at home making music. And then, I don't know, I think Barry and I just started talking about, oh, you know what we could do, like a side kind of thing. We could come up with template. Well, they were, at that point, we were thinking they would be templates, but very quickly it turned into a much bigger idea, where we thought, we've made all these different types of music over the years and different styles and sounds. And we've got all these sounds that are on our computers. And because you don't use the same sounds all the time, sometimes you'll make one sound, you'll use it for 2 weeks, and then you don't use it again for another 5 or 6 years. So we thought, how can we utilize all this stuff? And we started knocking ideas about, and they kind of developed into what they are now, where they're these kind of studio environments, production environments. So you can basically, you know, the whole idea was is that you would open one of these things up, and instantly everything that you needed to make a track, be it the sounds, the samples, the processing, all the mix stuff, would be there for you to just get straight into. Because one of the hardest things, really, when you're making, especially when you're starting out, is why isn't the music I'm making sound like the records I like? And you can get bogged down in the, like, all the details of the mix and the pro, all of that kind of stuff. And we've just thought it would be a cool way to let people concentrate on their ideas rather than getting bogged down in the kind of, because you can actually kill your idea. Because you're like, does that sound right? And you start second guessing yourself. So if you're a little bit out, you've got a few rungs up the ladder, really. You can get stuck in a lot. God, I'm rabbiting here, aren't I? It's just easier to get going. And is that right?
Yeah, I think another way of looking at it, writing songs and ideas is one part of the process, as is coming up with lyrics and song parts. But then there's also the production side. It's finding the right samples to create the right kind of groove to fit the genre that you're trying to create, and then finding the right kind of sounds that go together that make a cohesive mix. Because a lot of times people find it really difficult to create the right blend of textures that will actually integrate together. Yeah. And sometimes they can have too many sounds that are too similar. So when you come to mix it, there's not enough separation or variation within the whole kind of picture of what you're trying to develop. And that's what we took out of the equation. We've handpicked and selected and created sounds that all really work together. And all you've got to do is come up with an idea, and you've got a pretty developed track without worrying about all the later production side of things. And the other thing is as well, especially if you're starting out or you're just getting used to using it, it's like having a jigsaw puzzle already built, and you get the chance to pull it apart and go, oh, yeah, why is that do that? And then go, oh, I get it. So instead of throwing all these ideas at people and saying, put it together, we've done it the other way around.
Yeah,
because yeah, it's a real creative environment, isn't it?
Yeah, because you the thing is, like, because all the processing and the mix stuff is there, and all the compression, all this, the sounds are already sounding like professional sounds. You're using them, and you can just look, and instead of having to do that thing where you've got to figure out how to put it all together, it's there for you, and you can learn from that as well. You go, I really like that effect on that sound. And with our environments anyway, you can just drag and drop it all over the place. So it's a completely modular thing where you can pull it apart, put it back together an infinite amount of different ways. Yeah, it's just, it's really, the it boils down to, it's just helping people get up and running. And because, what I mean, if I'd have had this 20 or 30 years ago when I started out making music, I would have, I'd have a lot more hair now, because it would be, you get bogged down it can be a minefield. We wanted to basically make things a little bit easier for people, but also give people the chance to play about with some of these amazing sounds that we've got.
And would it, correct me if I'm wrong, so it, the whole product anyway just came out of, would you say, an edge of frustration from your part when you were developing
as an
artist, and you know, just being able to have the freedom then to focus on the creative then. Is that the sentiment of what you're saying?
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, yeah. I think the other thing is as well is, you know, what, especially Dave and I worked on and off with Sasha for quite a few years, and other artists as well. And there's such a massive amount of output of ideas, and less than 10% of it ends up on the finished product. So there's all this stuff just lying around that were great ideas, and for anyone else would be like, wow, this is amazing. And it's just sat there doing nothing. So we thought, how can we share this and give it to people in a format that they can really develop something really quickly with great sounds that just never really got utilized? And we've got tons of this stuff. So it was just a case of going through old sessions and things that we did a while ago, and even some things that we released, but the really great sounds, and we might have only ever used them on that one track 20 years ago. And now that actual instrument, whether it be hardware or software, is sampled, and you can come up with your own hook or your own idea.
And what did it, you said that it went from a template to a full-fledged bigger project, right?
Yeah.
What was that switch? Why did that happen?
We looked, because when we were talking about knocking the idea back and forth, we looked to see what everybody else was doing, or if there was something similar to what we were thinking about out there already. And we looked, I don't want to kind of name any names, but we looked at our people, what was out there,
basically.
And yeah, it was very much they were templates for, this is how you make this track. And that wasn't what we wanted to do. We wanted to give people the opportunity to go, here's the sounds and the drums and the effects and everything for this type of music, you go and do whatever you want with it. And it was more that kind of thing that interested us. So that we didn't want to, because I think the word template's a bit of a weird one, because it says, if you do what this, you will get here. Whereas I think, if you're working in an environment that's been designed for a specific type of music, you can go and do your own thing and you can really run with it. It's, yeah, so that was our thinking really.
Yeah, I think the other aspect of it as well is we wanted to make every single part of it usable. So it's always an instrument. Like, you get some of these other environments or templates, I should say, and there's a lot of loops and samples and things,
yeah,
and stuff, or the predetermined, like a 20 bass lines and stuff like that. We give you the bass line, but we also give you the instrument so you can go and change the notes and create it yourself. So every single aspect of it is completely replayable. It's not just set in stone and that's what you get. You can completely change the whole idea and the concept of it. And the other thing we did as well is we really took a lot of time with the kind of macro performance control of the instruments, where they're very, very hands-on. And some of them go quite deep as well, because we use a lot of the Max plugins. That was an add-on to Ableton a couple of years ago. And Max for Live, you can basically build your own plugins. So, you know, where you'll have something, say, analog. Analog is a two-voice VCO analog emulated synthesizer, and it has two LFOs. If you add Max for Live, you can add more LFOs or more envelopes or other modulation generators, which makes it much more modular. And it means there's no limitations with the architecture of the original synthesizer, because you can just keep adding to it. And we do a lot of that in some of our sounds. So it goes way beyond the limitations of what the original instruments did. And it sounds like a bit of a wormhole, but when you see it in action and what it's doing, and what we also do is we have instructions within the notes of Ableton. So when you open the little notepad in the bottom left corner, when you highlight an instrument, it will actually tell you, and the color coded as well. So you'll go, if you change the red ones, which is the filter, this will change the tone of the instrument. I think the yellow ones, modulation. So it explains what's going to happen when you play with those controls as well. So all of it is very much a kind of learning aspect of what you can do.
You just don't get that flexibility if you're buying a template with loops, because you are basically just rearranging somebody else's music, or you're trying to make something from somebody else's creative output, right?
Yeah, where that's a good way of putting it.
With us, there's a little idea there that you can look at. If you want to use that MIDI, or you can do, I mean, you don't mind, but you know, being able to change it all and come up with your own completely new idea very quickly, and it sound professional, that was what was really exciting for us. We thought, okay, then we're onto something here, because we didn't really see anybody else out there at that time anyway that was doing that. It was all very much static loops or presets for a synth or something, and which meant you had to buy that synth, and then you had to buy another bit of software and another bit of software. With our environments, you basically, if you have Ableton and you have access to the samplers, the simpler, the analog, then you're fully tooled up.
Awesome. Let's just take in a scenario for a second. So let's say I'm a new producer. I've just started using Ableton. I kind of understand the basics.
Yeah.
You were talking about how obviously a lot of the environments make that kind of more professional sounding track. Like, what am I going to really discover about if I've already got an idea for a song and I can put it into this environment? What specifics are we looking at when it comes to obviously different instrumentation and the way in which I've previously been using Ableton? So from the basics, understanding how I'm using Ableton to using the environment that you guys have created. What's the biggest difference between those two things?
That's a big question.
I think one aspect of it is, you know, when you add an instrument with Ableton, you know, you're adding that particular sound. Yeah. And the other things that we've done, all the processing, all the effects and compression, all of the things that tailor that sound and make it fit within a track, that part of the engineer part of it has been taken out because we've already done it. And the way we do our effects as well is we do them as an individual rack instrument, and the part of the sound. So when you load the instrument, it loads synth, it loads the processing, and it loads the effects. But you can also use that whole section and add it to a different instrument. So say you've got one synth and you go, I really love the delay and the reverb on that one. And you can grab that and just drag it and put it on something else, and it's instantly going to work when you swap it out. So it's very much this kind of mix and match and modular aspect of how we were trying to do it, where it's much more complete as a sound, and you don't have to then go and do the engineering down the line because it's already been done when you add the whole instrument.
Yeah, and that's super useful.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna ask, that was the crux of what I guess I was probably asking, is because it's such a big job for someone who's just coming in and using Ableton, that you want to be able to remove especially those things around like EQing and all those kind of other things that are technically, that you just want to get to the meat of the song basis. Well,
the thing is, what you've got to look at is how the music industry's changed in the last 15 years alone. Is when I was at the peak of my career with my band in the early 90s, we were going to recording studios to record all our tracks. So we had a setup at home, we had a computer, an Atari at the time with Cubase, and we'd create the track with all our gear. We'd pack all the stuff in the car and drive to a professional studio. We used to work in the Roundhouse down in London, and we'd go and finish what we're doing. And now, because you can do so much at home now, you have to wear a few different hats when you're working. And what you tend to find is these modern day artists, they're not just song creators and writers, they're actually kind of producers as well, because they can learn to use these tools at home. And when you get to the studio, the track's done. Some people can even do it at home, you know what I mean? And I think we're giving you all those tools in one box to really get it to a point where you can feel confident that I can do this on my own.
Yeah.
And it's one of them. It takes a long time to learn, but the more and more you do it, and the more and more you've got a guide to help you point you in the right direction, I think you're going to get from A to B a lot quicker than you would have done in the past. Like with me, I was always sat on the shoulder of whoever was engineering our track, and I'm like, why are you using that compressor and not that one?
Yeah.
And what's that reverb and what's that delay? And from years and years of doing that, you slowly started to absorb, oh, I get why he's doing that. And that's what we're delivering in some ways as well. There's a lot of information out there and a lot of opportunity as far as software for you to get to an incredible place right now. And some of the best recent bands in the last few years, a lot of the stuff's been recorded at home anyway. Look at Billie Eilish. Her and Phineas did the whole thing in their bedroom, you know what I mean, and got the final kind of polish at the end. But they weren't that far off from where they developed them themselves, just in their bedroom. The thing, it's mind-blowing where you can get.
The other thing as well to consider is that with our environment, because you don't need any third-party software, you're not getting into this conversation where, especially when you start, this happens a lot when you're starting out, it's like, oh, you need this bit of software to make you sound like this, or you've got to buy this expensive bit of software because that's what this person uses. And most of that is just nonsense, really. It's, yeah, if you have the hardware, there is a benefit to it, but a lot of people can't afford that, especially at the moment. We've sculpted these sounds and made them what we would like to think anyway, already at a very high standard. So when you're just learning, or if you've got, say you've got an idea, you and your mates have got an idea, and you go, I want to make a techno track, but I know very little about the programming, but I know I've got this idea. If you had our techno environment, you would open it up and the bass sounds like a Ben Clock bass line, or it's there for you. And it really is, your journey should be a lot smoother going from A to B, where you know you can actually develop your idea properly and get up and running.
Another aspect of looking at it as well, we know a lot of guys who are composers and they do a lot of stuff for trailers and movies and things like that. And they're amazing musicians, but they can't write electronic music for shit. So for somebody like that who's on a deadline and go, we need a house track, you know what I mean? They can just get it up. It already sounds great. Add a few new melodies and a few other bits. Within an hour, you've got something you can send off. So if you're on a deadline as well, it's a good way of being able to knock something up really fast without having to find all the drums and the right bass and the right keys and stuff. We've already got a good selection of things together that once you come up with a new idea, it's going to sound pretty fresh without you really needing to change that much.
The other thing,
there's a lot of different aspects to it.
Yeah, because Ableton is such a powerful sequencer, isn't it? It's because it's so modular, you can put anything into it, and our environments really utilize that, where even if you want to put your own drums into it, you can use our drum rack, put your own kind of snare drum or kick drum or hi-hats into it, and it's processed for you. So it will sound great, and you can tweak it, and you can do, it's like a one-stop shop. It's all there, right? And Ableton's brilliantly designed, so you're not trying to route this through that, and it can get very complicated, and it can be very frustrating as well. And I think that's half the problem, isn't it, when starting out, for sure.
Definitely, and I think you You highlighted a really key problem there, which is that it can probably save you a bit of money too.
Exactly.
It's just always a, so it can empower you and save you a bit of money. Who doesn't want to do that, especially at the beginning of their career? So that's a big win. Obviously, getting to the meat of the track and being able to produce the ideas that you really want to do and get them from your head into a really professional sounding environment is definitely really important as well. But at the moment, what, in your professional opinion, from everything that you've seen from starting this project all through all the other projects you both have been involved in, what's the biggest challenge that you've seen like musicians generally face when it comes to production, or even producers and within themselves? Is it about being able to take the idea from their mind and get it into that professional sounding quality, or is it maybe that there are just so many ideas that they can't get them out? What's the biggest challenge?
Here's the first thing to throw in. One of my kind of titles or job when I've been working with Sasha especially was to create sounds that really want to pull an idea out of you. When I'm actually developing and sound designing stuff, I try and make the feel of the instruments be really responsive. So the filter to velocity and things like that. So it's very expressive, whether it's from the filter within the synth, or it could be the effects or other things like that. And once you create a really great sound like that and somebody gets it up, straight away they're like, oh, wow, that's amazing. And within a couple of minutes, you could have a really good little idea. One example of that was, there was a track that Charlie May was working on with me, and there was one sound I created. Oh God, I can't even remember what I called it now. But yeah, it was just quite a belly sort of mallety sound. And within 5 minutes, Charlie had created this whole idea, and it was beautiful. It just happened just like that. And other times with hardware back in the day, we'd go away, we'd create 15 or 20 sounds on, say, one device, say the Virus, Axis Virus, which has been a huge part of what we've done for years. And then when we get to the writing process, you've already got these tools tucked away and go, yeah, I've got this sound that's going to really work for that. And it's like what we've done with our environments as well. We tried to make everything feel really responsive and really give you something back, because it's funny, when you're actually writing music, a certain sound triggers a certain emotion or a certain way that you want to approach that particular style of music. And that's key, because if you get it right and it's really suggestive to you as you're playing it, you're going to come up with an idea really quickly.
I think the biggest hurdle people face, there's multiple things, right? There's the being cut, not getting, you can get knocked back quite quickly, and you can get disheartened quite quickly if you're, you know, if you're struggling with an idea, or if you're struggling with trying to get what you hear in your head out of you. That's a big thing, because it messes with your mind, your mood, it takes over. And that's a big thing. And I think people talk about writer's block, and it's finding your own voice, really, and being unique. And I think that's a real problem, because with Spotify and the way music is consumed, there's no, it has to be 3.5 minutes long. It doesn't have to be 3.5 minutes long. It's finding your own voice. I think that's, especially in the music industry today, it doesn't happen very often. I mentioned Billie Eilish, which was, you know, she's got her own thing. But if you look at a lot of kind of music, it's either kind of regurgitating stuff that was popular, or if somebody smashes it, then everybody starts doing that. And yeah, you could go on and on. The multitude of things, isn't it? The financial side of it as well. It's difficult. I'm not sure if I had to start today, I can't imagine how difficult that would be, because there's so many things that just gates or hurdles that you have to jump to get your music out there. It's kind of, you know, back in the day, you'd have an A&R guy saying you should be doing this, or you should work with this vocalist. But now it's completely changed. It can be, sometimes it's not even about the music, is it? It's your profile. And that, I've done a bit of ghostwriting in my time as well. And I've worked with some people where they were very popular on Instagram, but they weren't that bothered about actually making the music. It was a lifestyle thing, which that's fine. And it's a different thing, isn't it? But yeah, there's so many things. Modern musicians have got it hard, very hard. It's a tough world out there at the moment.
That is very true. So if you could give someone some advice then that was just starting to develop their skill set around production, what would you say to them today? Maybe your younger selves as well.
I think things is you have to learn your tools. You know what I mean? If you know It's funny, as an example, you know, when we were first starting out with my label, we had a couple of young guys around the neighborhood and some other guys that we met from Leicester called Digital Blondes, and they had very limited gear. They had maybe two synths and a drum machine, and yet they could come up with these amazing ideas that you knew were hooky as hell, but they were very limited in what they could do because they didn't have much. But what they could do with the synths that they had was they knew them inside out, and they could absolutely rinse every way you could create something that's very unique to that keyboard. It's about your tools, isn't it? You know what I mean? More than anything, I think if you really know the ins and outs of all the things that you've got, then that's the first step to cutting off limitations, or where you're being, you're limiting where your reach can be as far as developing ideas and stuff, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Here's another example as well. Like when John and I, with Evolution, we did so many bloody remixes, there's hundreds. And, you know, we were doing sometimes two a week at some point. And to not sound the same or make everything feel like, oh, it's just like the last one, is we go in the studio and we go, we're going to do this remix, and we're only going to use the MS-20, which is a monophonic analog synth from the early 70s. Which means you can't play chords. And we create sounds and then we'd sample it, which means we could then play it polyphonic, but we create the drums are done with the same synth. We'd really make it as hard as possible so we don't keep reaching for our favorites. And you'd end up with a really mad idea. Prime example of somebody like that is like Vince Clarke with Eurasia. All of his sounds and stuff, all the drums that he'd use in any of his tracks were all sounds he'd create using his synthesizers. He wouldn't use a drum machine. He'd sample, he'd create a hi-hat and a snare and so on. But what it does is it gives you real originality and something different. And you get that from really knowing what you've got at your disposal in your studio. So it's a big part of it.
I think the best good piece of advice is just to trust yourself. You trust your own taste. Really, both Barry and myself, there was lots of people that were making music when we started out, and you can get caught up with the herd. And I think it's, you know, you should learn to trust your judgment on things, because they're your ideas, right? So if you feel very strongly about something, you should really stick with it, because that's what's going to get you places, I think. Yeah. And be prolific. You have to be prolific.
I read a quote last week from Joni Mitchell saying that this was back in her time as well, was that record companies want to sign people who are easy to mold and push and develop to where the record company or your management or whatever sees you where they think you should be. And she says artists should be the complete opposite. They should be rule breakers. They should be risk takers. But the reason these people came to your door is because of what you were doing anyway. So don't let people change where you think you should be. Trust your own gut instincts, like Dave said, and develop your own ideas, because that's where originality comes from. Good on Joni Mitchell.
And it is the hardest thing to do as well, though. We're very lucky with our little crew of people that we work with. We've all known each other a long time. And if we'll have arguments in the studio, but you can tell when somebody really feels very strongly about something, everybody kind of respects that, because, you know, there's something in that.
Yeah.
And the other thing as well is, I think, is that finding good people to work with is essential. One of the hardest things I think in music is definitely finding people that you can work with, because it's like being married. You're creating things, something from nothing, basically. And you have to be prepared to be blunt with each other. But it's not, you're not being malicious or anything. You're just kind of, you need to find those kind of partnerships or people to collaborate with, because I certainly couldn't do it on my own. I'd be there, I'd be getting lost in my own head. I wouldn't get anywhere. But having a great group of people that you can work with is another great thing that is something that should be very important.
So what I'm hearing is that you can be unique, making sure that you're using everything at your disposal. Don't follow the herd. Yeah, even things down to getting the latest plugins and etc. might not be that necessary. And it's just something that you need to follow in terms of your gut. Yeah.
And you know, like you said as well, it's that limitations can be a good thing. Yeah. Just because you've got the latest and greatest of everything else means you've got more you need to learn and understand, where if you really get to know the things you already have, that can be a real strength. We use third-party plugins. We've got stuff from Eventide and SSL, all of those guys that we've been using for years, but we've been doing this at a pro level for a long time. They are great products and they can definitely enhance things that you're doing, but they're not a necessity at all. Oh. You can really get to a great place just within Ableton with the tools that they've got. When the one thing about them as a company as well, they've really developed their software over the last 20 years. And the original core concept of what they first came up with hasn't changed. It's still exactly the same because it was such a great idea. And it's funny, you look at a lot of other doors that are out there like Logic and Cubase, and they've all grabbed ideas from Ableton's concept of how they see things and develop them within their own applications as well. But it's funny because when I go back and use one of the other ones, and I try and do something that I can do in Ableton and it doesn't work, it's really frustrating. So why haven't they stole that idea, you know? But it's been a weapon for us for a long, long time now. And Sasha was a very early adopter of it. And the Involver albums that we did, they wouldn't have been able to be created with any other piece of software because they couldn't do what Ableton could do. So it was a game changer for us, wasn't it, Dave?
You guys are going to be doing some workshops with Hypertribe anyway. So for anyone listening to this who wants to obviously be involved in those, make sure that you're on the Ableton course and make sure that you can tune in for those workshops in December. And if you want to check out everything to do with 36db, you can go over to 36db.live. Anywhere else that anyone can follow you guys?
We're both on Instagram, and the company's obviously on Instagram and Facebook as well. There's plenty of music out there as well to get stuck into. So yeah, we're out there. We're really looking forward to doing the masterclasses, actually. It'll be good.
Can't wait. And if you want to check out any of the environments as well, you can go onto the website and check them out there, and you can see which things are talking about there. So thank you very much, both of you, for joining us. And we'll see you in the workshop.